clearly Doodles have gone for a, we're going to attract a large audience at probably a lower ticket price in the future. I'm curious to see how big that uptake is on the low ticket price of things and how they balance it out with having these, like, you know, $5,000, $6,000 asset cartoons. It's going to be a really interesting push and pull that I think we've talked about on the show a few times before. Hello and welcome back to the Floorcast, episode 69. No jokes. Okay, carry on. Of the NFT podcast brought to you by Floor, the community-run podcast for the Floor app community. And I am back in the hosting chair today, rejoined by the usual C's, Chris K. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, thanks. Good to be here for our 69th episode. So exciting.
Corwin, how are you?
I'm doing wonderfully. I'm very happy you're back, Pat, and I'm not stuck with Chris K this week, but I'm doing great.
Still haven't managed to buy an XLR cable for your microphone, though.
No, not yet.
And if I sound echoey, it's because I'm in a new apartment and there is nothing apart from my mic, desk, and computer in this room. So, you know, we usually pride ourselves on having top-tier audio, but today it's basically just Chris's that is going to be really good.
Yeah, this is a different look for you, Pat. Usually, you know, you have all sorts of like sporting stuff behind you. Now it just looks like you're Johnny Ive shooting an Apple commercial.
Actually, I've gone for the minimalist look. I actually have my my Arsenal signed jersey in the corner, just resting on the wall. But I have nothing in here. Like, there's no, you know, there's nothing to put anything here. So I'm hoping that will change over the next 2 or 3 weeks. Let's see, like every episode we record, maybe I'll have something new in here, which would be fun.
Yeah, that'd be really good for the listeners if we were a video podcast.
Which we're not.
Whoa,
I don't know if that's
your video, Chris K, just zoomed out so much.
Was that like a slight at me, by the way? Like, oh, why aren't we video? Right, what about the weather, Chris K? How is that doing on your end? New York feeling a bit hotter now?
No, not really. So we had lots and lots of rain over the weekend that literally stayed in the house all weekend. And then it's got sort of bright, but it's not really got warm. It's sort of right now sitting around sort of probably 10 degrees Celsius and not really going anywhere. It's not what I expect for this time of year. How is it over in London? You seem cold.
No. It was 18 degrees yesterday. And I think it must be like 14, 15 today. I mean, I was at a soccer game last night and I was just in a jumper. So usually, at this time of year, still, actually it is May. So yeah, it's still 14, 15 degrees. It's getting warmer, I think, the next few weeks. If it's this level or warmer, it'll be good. But yeah, Corwin, is it getting too hot for you yet, or are you still cool enough?
No, it's cool. I wish it was getting hotter, but like Chris K said, it literally started raining Friday and did not stop all weekend. Like everyone's weekend was just rain here. It's just horrible.
Sounds like London.
But now today, it was on my walk to work. It wasn't raining, but now it's raining again. So hopefully it ends pretty soon.
Hopefully. And let's get right into this. First and foremost, I think the biggest news of the week is definitely Blur introducing Blend, the peer-to-peer perpetual lending protocol for NFTs. So essentially, NFT lending on leverage, Chris K. I mean, Blur have been able to attract a big market share of volumes. I mean, there's been a lot of criticism of how much of it's wash trading, but they have been able to iterate their product really quickly. This iteration to me, and before I get your thoughts, is definitely a sign that this isn't a platform that is going to onboard users or create an environment where like normies or NFT noobs are going to flock to. This is a place that pros and people in the weeds are going to use, which is fine. But I've seen a lot of criticism of Blend, and I think a lot of it is rightfully, I mean, yeah, 600 quote tweets compared to 800 retweets probably says it all, doesn't it?
Yeah, on one side, it's interesting. Like, you know, I've heard people talking about lending NFTs and sort of the liquidity problem for like years. And it's interesting to see a marketplace come out there and sort of have a solution. Like I can take my NFTs that are largely illiquid and I can use them as a basis of lending and get sort of real ETH for that I can then use for more trading. That's great. I think you're right. Like this isn't a product that's going to onboard people. It's really sort of fueling the speculative and sort of trading sort of side of the industry. And long term, I don't know if that's a good thing. I think you have a problem right now where, you know, a lot of projects are sort of underwater. And I'm not quite sure how that will play into sort of the lending market if, you know, your assets are fluctuating so much in value, especially, you know, from when you first bought them. So I'm curious to see how that plays out. It's good to see them doing something in the space and sort of innovating, but I think it's sort of very closed to, you know, this is a product for traders who need that liquidity versus anything else.
Leverage has largely gone badly for retail, but also a lot of institutional capital on the crypto front. I am reticent to suggest that anything other than that will happen with Blur. Like I just can't see it being a good idea. I mean, did you guys see that tweet from Nate Alex, which was like, buy this NFT for 2 ETH, sell it for 8. Use that 8 ETH to lend out and use 64 ETH to buy this NFT and sell that for 200 ETH, etc. And it goes out to 1,000 ETH and it has like 1,000 likes. And all of a sudden he was like, by the way, guys, this was a meme. Like you can't actually do that, which was really funny. Corwin, I'm curious to hear your takes. I mean, you've been telling me a lot about how Blur has essentially meant a lot of NFT floors are struggling to hold up. And I don't know if this is going to help that at all.
Yeah, I think lending as an incentive for points, I don't know if that is like the best thing. I don't know how many people are going to use this, honestly. I've seen people like, apparently you can get into Azuki now at 2 ETH. So it definitely seems like an interesting concept. I haven't dove deep into it, but the interface does look pretty confusing, at least to people who are new to like leveraging.
Interesting that you sort of criticize the interface. Like I think Blur is very good at making interfaces for traders. I think it's just bad at making interfaces for normies, essentially.
I mean, this kind of like buy now, pay later for NFTs. I just can't see it going well. Like, I mean, dude just had a good tweet where he's like, predictably understanding the duration and rate of loan borrow when taking on significant leverage is fundamental to making prudent financial decisions. I don't see how a perpetual lending mechanism where the lender can revoke at any time, giving the borrower limited notice and recourse, ends well for borrowers. Yeah, I mean, this is just going to mess with a lot of people who don't have the funds to cover kind of losses that might come. I wanted to shift this conversation more broadly to Blur trying to eat up a lot of like OpenSea's volume and now clearly trying to cater hard for first and foremost retail traders. Like, what's the end game here, Chris K? Like, once they stop iterating and stop incentivizing buying and selling and listing, like where do Blur go?
I mean, everything's going to zero, right? I think they just want to win the traders market at any cost. And, you know, everything they've done with their rewards, their airdrops, with their user interface, like it's catering towards that one single goal. Like, I really don't think they've got much of a plan beyond that. Or at least, you know, they haven't played those cards at all at this point. The way I sort of see the general marketplace going, you know, Blur is going to continue to eat more and more of that sort of speculative trading sort of activity. And then it's up to the other marketplaces to really sort of put a line in the sand and say, well, okay, well, that's great. But, you know, over here, where we believe in X and we're building a product to facilitate that. And, you know, we saw that sort of this week with Sotheby's announcing their metaverse, their sort of NFT marketplace purely aimed at sort of auctions and sort of artists. And I think you're just going to see more and more of those sort of the segregation of the types of marketplaces that you encounter. If you're trading, you go to Blur. If you're looking for art, you go to Sotheby's or whatever. So I think it's more sort of on OpenSea, on LuxRare, on X2Y2 to sort of make that case, you know, hey, why are we special? Who is our customer? What are we sort of doing for the space? And, you know, what is our differentiating factors around that? So I think that's what I'm more interested in seeing versus, okay, well, how does Blur pivot from being a trading platform to something else? Because I just don't think they will, or at least I don't think it's in their short-term roadmap.
Have a look at what I just sent in the Floorcast channel, because I think this is how it ends up.
Yeah, exactly. Like that is the other thing, like the financial literacy among a lot of NFT holders, and I'm purely sort of judging based on the typing skills in Discord, I've got to imagine it's pretty low. And you're giving people, you know, tools that, you know, if you know what you're doing, if you're sort of used to sort of financial trading, you know, you're at home with, but otherwise, you know, you're giving yourself a gun to shoot yourself with. I think that's definitely sort of the darker side of sort of moves like this.
Yeah. Who tweeted, it was like, we finally got the pawn shop inside the casino, which I thought was like hilarious. A really brilliant tweet. Colin, before we move on to our next subject, like any thoughts? Or any final thoughts rather? No final thoughts.
No final thoughts. I gave my thoughts earlier. I'm just going to be interested to see like how many people are going to use this for just to get like extra like Blur points for season two.
Let's move on to our second topic, which was Doodles unveiling the studio experience to holders, which actually looks pretty awesome, guys. So it gives you access to marketplaces and probably most importantly, the long-awaited Doodles 2 character builder, which is essentially, you know, being able to customize and mint your doodle. You can dress them up with wearables. You know, there was all these gold socks jokes about Doodles a few weeks ago, but it seems to be that the Doodles community have reacted really positively to this. And after raising a ton of money, doing a lot of big name hiring and advisory roles, et cetera, it finally looks like the proposition they've been proposing over the last like 9 months is coming to some fruition, Chris-Kay.
Yeah, it's really good. So I'm not a Doodles holder. I haven't played with any of this, but just looking at the videos on here, like they've done a great job with sort of user interface, user experience. You know, it feels like, you know, what do you expect from a video game and a character creator? You seem to have a lot of customization options when you're sort of preparing your doodle to mint. You have access to sort of all the things you own. Generally, it just seems a fun and sort of well thought out experience. I think definitely good for onboarding people into the space who are maybe new to the Doodles ecosystem and want to sort of get a sense for the visual identity they can create. I'm generally excited for this.
Corwin?
Yeah, it looks really awesome. It seems like Doodles has been listening to the community a lot lately because they had a lot of backlash the past 2 months. Now they're doing like weekly spaces, they're hearing from their community, they're doing a lot of cool things. And their floor price actually went up from like 2.1 to 3 off of this. The one thing I like about their experience, which I think is like kind of getting a lot more people into it, is they have like a lot of achievement-based things. So it's like, hey, if you held a doodle since this, then you have this achievement. Or if you opened one duplicator, you have this, or XYZ, however it may go. They have like achievements, and now Pharrell's working with them and dropping a limited 300 piece edition that will be raffled off to people who have like 6 achievements or whatever it may be on the back end. So like the gamification of holding and being like a holder seems to be working for them.
The customization and sort of how they're doing partnerships is interesting because they've got Pharrell, they've got Adidas, I think BBC, and like a few other brands sort of going in there. And it's not just, okay, well, I'm buying a pair of digital socks. It's like I'm getting a box of stuff. And, you know, there's a physical item in there as well as just lots of things to customize your doodles. Like they're definitely doing a good job, I think, on just the branding and just the overall fun aspect of this.
I think this is really, really sleek and smooth. I'm curious to see, Chris, what the hell are the BBC going to do here?
I learned this recently. It's not BBC as in the beloved institution that is the British Broadcasting Corporation. This is some ice cream brand or something. Colin, do you know anything about BBC ice cream?
No, I've never even heard of that. I thought it was the Wait, what? Where did you guys? Where is this coming from?
I was really like, oh, this is weird.
Oh, Billionaires Boys Club. No, I haven't heard of
Billionaires Boys. Yeah, you have, Corwin. Come on, the brand.
Wait, they don't even sell ice cream. Why do they have
did you say ice cream?
You know Billionaire Boys Club. It's the fashion brand.
Never heard of them.
Oh, it's on Mercer. Oh, I have been in the shop before.
Of course you have. This is like up your alley, man.
No, but like, this is not my style. What is this? All I wear is black and they have a lot of colors here.
Yeah, I don't see any hoodies. You wouldn't like this, Colin.
Thank you.
Well, I mean, I thought it would be weird for the BBC to use taxpayer dollars, Chris K. You could buy some or like launch a duplicator box or whatever. It's terrible. Yeah, I'm really curious to see on the business model side of things, like they have raised a lot of money. They've obviously got big cash reserves, but like for me, I'm very curious where this goes. Clearly, Doodles have gone for we're going to attract a large audience at probably a lower ticket price in the future. I'm curious to see how big that uptake is on the low ticket price of things and how they balance it out with having these like, you know, $5,000, $6,000 asset cartoons. It's going to be a really interesting push and pull that I think we've talked about on the show a few times before.
Yeah, I mean, my view here is like, I think it's definitely a race to the bottom. Like, I don't think you'll be seeing $1,000 assets being traded as the norm within Doodles once all this stuff goes live. I think it'll be more a case of, okay, I'm going to spend $10. I'm going to get a nice little hat for my Doodles. And obviously you have rarity built in on top of that. So more like sort of a traditional collectible trading card sort of marketplace where low price to entry, but then as the rarity increases or as the benefits or sort of physical components sort of are thrown in, that's where you pump the value.
Cool. And any final thoughts from you?
No, just it's really cool to see what Doodles is doing, like I said earlier. Is that a Meta hoodie in your background?
No, that's a yellow bag that says, "You crack me up."
And no, it's like an above egg. It, the blue infinity symbol.
Why would I have a Meta? No, that's a seat for your office chair.
Okay.
That's it. That's all I've got. It's not from Meta. Sorry. Let's talk about another big NFT project in the headlines this week, Chris K. And this was the Moonbirds unnesting, that led to the Diamond Exhibition claims. But there was a bit of a mess up, wasn't there, Chris K, with a contract? Want to run us through this one?
Yeah, so last week I was all excited. My Moonbird had received its diamond nest. That means that I'd nested it for a year and I was ready to claim some artwork in their diamond exhibition. I got a mint pass that I burnt and I ranked my choices 1 through like 12. Honestly, I think most people would have put Beeple first because he was sort of one of the most notable artists in the drop. And then I sort of happily was waiting for the raffle results. And then it started going wrong. You had sort of people like Tom from Floor. He got like 10 of his 9th choice item. I know some dude got 3 Beeples. Amazingly lucky. That guy should really buy a lottery ticket and test it. As these sort of things came in, it became very clear in the Moonbird's Discord that, you know, this isn't the artist's PFP. This is the statistician's PFP. And it turns out everyone in there is sort of an armchair data scientist doing analysis of what was going on. In terms of sort of what happened, it seemed like the folks designing the raffle mechanics had made a few errors. They hadn't really considered what happens if you have multiple entries in the raffle. So generally, sort of if you had multiple Moonbirds, you have multiple entries, you got all of the same choice versus, I think, re-rolling and sort of having a more random distribution. There were issues where the order of that you burnt your mint pass in mattered. So I think folks with a lower number passes had statistically a higher probability to get a better choice. And then there was sort of a few other things. Since everyone put Beeple as your first choice, typically that what that meant is that you'd end up getting your 6th or worst pick. If you didn't put Beeple as your first choice, you generally get number 1. So like whatever was going on, it just didn't seem like it was implemented in a way that would make people happy. On top of that, the dev team were a bit weird on Discord. One of the devs who was obviously a bit stressed was sort of ranting a bit on the voice chat. He was like, I'm sick of everyone complaining they got the last choice. I look at their wallet, it's like their second or third. This is rubbish. And then finally he was like, I've been writing code for 15 hours. I'm off to bed, and then hung up. If something goes wrong, don't let your development team directly sort of speak to customers unless you're very sort of confident in how they'll present themselves. It sounds like a few things went wrong here. Everyone is blaming the developers. I'm honestly not sure that's fair. You know, I think mistakes happen, and it's good when you recognize them and, you know, just don't make them again. From the product side, it seemed like no one had really specced out how this raffle was meant to work. But I think more concerningly, it seemed like the code for the raffle was written 12 hours before and hadn't really been tested or simulated. And we know this because they published their source code. In terms of what Proof are sort of saying they're going to do right now, they're going to re-roll the raffle for folks who want to send back the artwork they were awarded to sort of see, well, would you get different choices? Now, obviously, Mr. Three Beeples isn't going to send back all his Beeples. I think he's probably sold them already on OpenSea. So I think there's still like a lingering question in the Moonbirds community around the fairness of that experience and like the impact of these sort of statistical anomalies, let's say, on sort of everyone's results. But yeah, after sort of a year of sort of holding my Moonbird, this kind of leaves a bit of a bitter taste in my mouth, especially since I wasn't the one who got the three Beeples. I think bigger picture, it shows both the importance of transparency within sort of the community, especially when you're doing raffles and stuff, like let people in and sort of give them more information around the methodology, see the code early, because I think you can catch these issues. But from like Proof's perspective, this is yet another example of where they've sort of failed to execute on something that should have been sort of relatively simple, I'd think. As a Proof and Moonbirds holder, it's just disappointing to see again and again either nothing materializes or what materializes isn't quite what you were hoping for. Case in point, the bum bags, the socks, etc. Where is Moonbirds going to go from here, I think, is the question.
Well, that's exactly the question that I was going to ask, Chris K. Like, what is the... Like, this was the thing that you were staking your Moonbird for this whole time. It's left a sour taste in your mouth as a holder. Like, what's the next step here?
I don't know. Like, I've seen the floor price drop. I think there's suggestions on how to make this right still doesn't really sort of change much. Like, okay, I can re-roll and I'm now raffling for a bit of the shitty artwork that no one wants. I know Kevin Rose was like, oh, we'll throw in some Moonbirds and special prizes here, but... You know, that I think doesn't necessarily change sort of the feeling of a lot of people. And like, I think the more you get sort of the data scientists and sort of sleuths in the Discord sort of graphing and sort of doing analysis of this, it's like, you know, they really didn't think this one through. I'm open to suggestions. Pet, Corwin, what would you do in Moonbird's position at this point?
I'll let Corwin go first.
I have no idea. Like, the amount of Moon... Birds holders that I know and are very upset by this. Someone I know literally has 10 and has been holding since mid and has them nested, was kind of like on the verge of just like literally blur bid pooling all of them. And I don't know what Proof does from here on that front. I'm sure they'll come up with a solution. I think like we talked about this last week, CK with Talons coming out, maybe something cool with Talons to make it up to them. I know a lot of people are upset. I don't know the details of the mechanics, but like you said, like anything you put as like number two, or if you put anything else besides people number one, apparently you're guaranteed to get it, which I feel like a lot of this was kind of like game theory based too. Like, I don't know if something went wrong in the contract or this was how it was meant to be.
Yeah, so just one clarification there. There isn't a contract or anything. They're basically just using a bit of code to sort of look at everyone's choices, do a bit of shuffling, and then sort of distribute. And it's just they fail to sort of think about, oh, well, what if people have multiple entries? Or sort of in the case of like Beeple especially, like there were only 100 of those and like a few thousands of Moonbirds holders actually sort of in that raffle. So anyone who would have Beeple as number one was unlikely to get it anyway. But the fact that they weren't accounting for multiple entries just seemed a bit weird. And like, I've coded raffles before. I can empathize with them. Like, it's very easy to sort of go down one path and think, okay, well, this is how you've got to do it, right? I think the bigger sort of flaw here is they wrote the code to do the raffle results like hours before the raffle was due. They didn't really test it. They didn't really simulate it. And, you know, I think as everyone on the Discord is proving, it's very sort of trivial to sort of run the raffle a few times and you start seeing sort of odd things come out that sort of deviate from what you'd expect statistically. Like no one seemed to sort of look at this or sort of devote enough time to properly vet and sort of audit this.
Yeah. Do you think, I mean, it's all hindsight now, CK, but do you think they should have came out with the mechanics beforehand? Or do you think it's kind of part of like the game theory and like, we don't like if everyone chooses Beeple, et cetera, then this is how it's going to go.
Like in NFT world, everyone is sort of asking for clarification and updates. Like I don't think it would have done much if they posted a summary to Discord on how it works. And like most of it you kind of got, and like it was like the edge cases that maybe they didn't really explain their thinking around. I think the bigger thing is just they never really tested this. If you're building software, make sure it works. Make sure that you're confident in it before you actually run it with live data and sort of potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of assets. It just, I don't know. It speaks to a team that either is sort of inexperienced and not sort of thinking about these things, or a team that is just working on sort of a tight or sort of unrealistic time frame and hasn't really planned for this.
Yeah. So, Pat, where does proof go from here?
So I was going to say, like, from an outside perspective, the one thing I thought was really pretty cool about proof from someone that, you know, couldn't afford a proof pass at its peak, probably could now. sorry, Chris K. And thought Moonbirds were cool when they first came out. I think their premium feel from an outsider's perspective has kind of worn off and diminished. They've taken on a lot of VC funding to obviously expand the collection sizes and do more drops, etc. And I know the kind of art curated drops they've done are quite good. Me personally, if I was them, and from an outside perspective again, I think they should have concentrated on that fewer is better mentality of curating for those 1,000 proof holders and then for those 10,000 Moonbird holders a lot more and doubling down on them. And I think the problems they've had have been from expanding too much too quickly and trying to do too much too quickly. I think the team there has obviously seen like, wow, we've made so much money from selling this pass and then so much money from Moonbirds. I don't know the exact figures. Like we need to double down on every vertical that we possibly can. And I think that's gone wrong for them. I mean, there were talks of a platform. Where's that gone? A Discord competitor, etc. Like there's been talk of doing so much when actually they should have probably just doubled down on the initial value proposition, which was a premium digital membership pass that led to, you know, digital physical experiences and was very, very, not elitist, but like, you know, the even more premium Soho House of the Metaverse type of vibe. And I think that's kind of now lost because they've, yeah, gone too much too quickly, as I said.
I disagree with that. Like, too much too quickly implies they've really done things. and I really don't think they have. You know, Moonbirds launched, they have a cool nesting mechanic. Okay, they've got a few, you know, nice things on the contract side. And like, their dev team is usually good with that. You know, I think that whole minting experience, I think the whole nesting experience has been great. It's just, it seems like they haven't really been focused on building anything in the background. You know, their town hall, what was it, in January? It seemed like they'd gave up on high rise, their sort of Web3 metaverse-y online gallery sort of play a long time ago when they realized, well, actually everyone in this space is building the same thing. And like their more recent stuff, it seems like they're just pandering to holders who just want a return. They want liquidity. They want a token. They want free stuff at the end of the day. And that's why we're getting things like Talons. That's why we're getting things like the Mythics. Very sort of knee-jerk in terms of their roadmap. With I just think very little going on behind the scenes. Now, I could be wrong. I'd love to be wrong. But right now, it just seems like they're sitting on a ton of cash and they don't necessarily have a clear direction beyond, oh, well, we care about art. We're a PFP for art collectors, which, you know, great vision, great sort of statement there. But, you know, let's see what you're going to do to make yourselves the sort of premier PFP for those art folks.
Thanks for that, Chris K. That was really funny. I really didn't expect you to come out with that, even as a holder of Bad Zemperi. Corwin, any final thoughts here? We've got so long on all these three topics. I think we're going to have to skim through the final ones.
Yeah, final thoughts here is I think Proof has a lot of room to come back from this. And what we talked about earlier of Doodles, like they messed up a bunch. I feel like with their community and they're making things right. Like I think Proof will eventually make things right. CK, unfortunately for you, you know, like I'm not in your situation. I didn't hold an asset for a year, like staked. So I know I definitely have different views on that.
Rightio, next topic here. Marvel founder goes Web3. So David Maisel, who founded Marvel Studios and was the exec producer of Iron Man, The Incredible Hulk, and many others, some of the Avenger films as well, has started a new studios called Mythos, and their first drop is Ecos today, actually. And it's starting at 10 ETH, which with a pretty funky auction functionality that, Chris K, I know you're not a bigger fan of, but we can chat about that in a minute. And the artwork are like hand-curated pieces of original comic book IP from about 30 years ago, which are really interesting that have been kind of like blown up and digitally rendered by like a really famous colorist. And they look amazing, to be honest with you. I don't know if I'm going to be able to afford one, to be honest with you. But it looks really cool. And it's yet another big name Web2 person thinking that Web3 is their next step, which is quite cool.
Yeah. Not a fan of the mechanics around this. So you pay 10 ETH in and that gets you a place in line, essentially, and then there's an auction for the actual price, and then you get the choice of, okay, for anything over the price of one, you get a refund or you get multiple items. For me, and, you know, I may just be simple, it's just complicated. It's like, I need to sort of think and sort of sit and understand these mechanics. I think when it comes to sort of minting experience for a lot of these auctions, like, it's a bit terrifying that you're sending all this ETH away and like, do you get it back? What happens? Are you going to mess it up? I feel like they could have done something a lot simpler. And, you know, this is without touching on sort of the risk for the team where, you know, God forbid they have a bug in the contract. That means that you can't get the money back out of it. I can see why folks want to do fresh and interesting mechanics, but I mean, you don't walk into sort of your local supermarket and started blind Dutch auction for a loaf of bread. I think there's nothing wrong with sort of the model where you give people money and you get something out of it. It's just, I don't think you need these bells and whistles.
I mean, the art's really cool. I think knowing the people who have created the contract, I'm pretty certain it will work. Perhaps a tad complex, but there aren't that many NFTs, so perhaps not meant for a broader audience. I'm going to try and get one. I don't know if I'm going to be able to, but let's see. Since Corwin didn't have any thoughts on that, Yuga have also made a big hire from the Web2 world. And this time it is the former EV of something from Epic Games to be their new CTO, Chris K, which is a really interesting move. I forgot exactly what the person's job title was.
He was this is the Fortnite guy, right?
Mike Sievers, former EVP of development at Epic Games, yeah.
Yeah. This is like yet another big hire, because didn't they bring in the...
This is a really big one, yeah.
Well, they hired, what was it, the COO of Activision? So
yeah, is it Activision? Yeah, was it Activision?
I think all of these game companies are pretty much the same these days.
That's true.
Yeah, I think it was Activision, but yeah, another great hire. You know, they're building up quite a team. I think, you know, it shows a lot of confidence in what they're building. And, you know, we've talked about this before. Like, you know, I'm technically impressed by what I see coming out of this team. I think I'm still waiting for sort of a product that sort of justifies all of this hiring. But yeah, it's just interesting to continue watching this as they sort of bring more people on. Now, anyone who's followed sort of gaming knows that just having the right people doesn't necessarily guarantee success. Just look at sort of Google Stadia and sort of initiatives like that. But, you know, they're trying to stack the deck in their favor. They've brought in people with a great amount of experience, talent, and relationships, which is what you need to really sort of succeed here.
Do you think that they have a bigger chance of succeeding going their own route, not their own route, but like hiring crypto native people rather than crypto curious who have done it in the Web2 space? Like, I'm very conflicted about, you know, we talked about David Maisel with Ecos. Like, I think knowing the team that are around him, you know, the chances of success there are probably quite strong. With Yuga, it kind of feels like you've got a crypto native team that are then plugging in a like Web2 exec or like a Web2 advisor. Kind of same with Doodles and Pharrell, for example. I have less confidence of that way of going about it, because what has made you up until this point quite special, novel, and breaking through like the boundaries of kind of traditional normal business models could be lost. And I don't know, there's been a lot of criticism leveled at Artifact, for example, that they aren't as mentioned as much by Nike. They are doing a lot more just pure Nike stuff. Like people saying like, oh, they've just become the tech team for Nike now and Dot Swoosh, which I think is quite unfair. But you see what I mean? Like when you have this kind of like Web2 plugin, I can see definitely why it might have the potential success, but I'm still not that certain about it.
I disagree there. Like, I think at the end of the day, you've sold a few JPEGs for a lot of money. That's great. But, you know, your goal is you're building a product, you're building a business. So hire people who have done that before. And I think like bringing that experience gives you a wealth of advantages. If you're sort of building something more on the technical side, maybe you're building the next peer-to-peer lending protocol, then sure, hire people with experience in blockchain, in crypto, Web3, because that is your product. But when your product is what sounds like a massive multiplayer online game, hire someone who has built a massively multiplayer online game before and can stop you from walking into the traps that would otherwise trip you up and sort of eat a lot of your time and money. That's the way I look at it. Like, hire experience based on what you need. It doesn't matter if they're Web3 people. And like, what does that even mean for someone like Yuga? I think it's just hire the most talented person for the job.
Coin, any final thoughts before we round up?
Yeah, I think it's awesome that they are hiring all these like big execs from these companies. However, like, I know we're talking about this like right now, but I don't think a lot of this is even going to like take effect. Like, I don't see Yuga having a game for at least like another year to 2 years. Like, game development is hard and it takes a long time. So it's like, how long are people going to actually wait for this product to come out?
Yeah, that's a challenge I see with a lot of like NFT projects. You know, when you're building games, when you're doing entertainment, when you're doing film, TV, animation, like the lead times are huge. Like, the reason we get like one series of Rick and Morty every 5 years is because, you know, it takes that long for the people in the sweatshops in Malaysia or wherever to draw the characters and get the animation done. It's not something where you should expect immediate results. And I think like that is problematic for so many of these projects.
Yeah, I think the rate of development, unless AI saves us all, doesn't get that much quicker, but should do, I guess, considering what I just mentioned. A few other things to note. OPEPN drops. Phantom expand to multi-chain, but Chris K hates the user experience. Pepe and the return of meme coins. Does that mean the bottom is in, or we have hit a new high, Chris K?
Always a new low.
Always a new low. Corwin?
I have no idea about OPEPN. That's a Jack Butcher project, right?
We were just talking about the Pepe meme coin, though.
The meme coin is going crazy. I thought you were saying OPEPN's.
I think we got confused by saying too many different things at this point.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, Pepe is like, I think they hit like, what, 500 million market cap or something
over
the weekend? Like
insane. Like,
people who put in like $200 are millionaires.
That's just ridiculous. Like,
I thought you brought up the Jack Butcher project because I think they're launching the reveal today, actually, or sometime this week.
Oh.
They're doing a lot of crazy stuff. Think with customization from what I've seen from some tweets, but I haven't dug into it that much.
That's interesting. Radio, thanks so much for listening, everyone. You can find us at The Floorcast on Twitter. You can find me at Pet Berisha, PetBerisha, and you can find Floor at Floor. Chris K, where can people find out more about you?
You can find me on Twitter at @CKahonen.
And what about you, Corwin?
Find me on Twitter at @ZeroXCorwin.
Amazing. And just remember that none of what we have said is financial advice, just great advice. And we'll have more Floorcast for you next week.